This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hello and welcome to the latest in LGBTIQ+ health and policy. Each episode, we bring you an interview with a leading voice in LGBTIQ+ health and well-being. I'm your host, Triana Butler. Thank you so much for joining us today. Now, as a heads up, in this episode, we'll be discussing domestic violence in LGBTQ communities, which is obviously a really challenging topic, and it does contain things that you may find upsetting. In this episode, we're using the term domestic violence to refer to violence in intimate relationships or between partners or ex-partners. Domestic violence can include any behavior that is threatening or controlling, where one person tries to exert power and control over another. Now, there's a lot of nuance in that conversation around language, but for simplicity, we're going to be using the term domestic violence to cover all of those behaviors in this episode. If you or someone you know is experiencing domestic or family violence or sexual assault, you can call the Rainbow Sexual, Domestic and Family Violence Helpline on 1-800-487-212 or 1-800-RESPECTS, 1-800-737-732. We'll be dropping some more support options for you in the show notes as well. Joining us on the latest today is Kai Noonan, Director of Sexual, Domestic and Family Violence Prevention at LGBTIQ+ Health Australia. Kai has been specialising in LGBTIQ+ sexual, domestic and family violence prevention for 10 years now in the areas of research, advocacy, resource development and training, and capacity building for professionals. We'll also be joined by Ben Bjarnason, an out gay former Queensland police officer who in 2020 founded the LGBTQ Domestic Violence Awareness Foundation. Ben became a fierce advocate for improved services for LGBTQ victims and survivors of domestic violence after discovering a huge gap in services after himself experiencing abuse within a same-sex relationship. In 2020, he had the honour of being inducted into the Queensland Government Domestic and Family Violence Prevention Honour Roll, and he's been nominated by the Queensland State as one of its nominees for the 2024 Australian of the Year Awards. Kai, I might start with you here. Domestic violence and intimate partner homicide is a topic that everybody is talking about right now. It's been right throughout the media this month. There have been protest marches right around the country. Have you seen this much attention on this issue in the time you've been working in this space?
Since 2016, we've actually seen a gradual decrease in intimate partner homicide rates in Australia. However, in the last 12 months, we've actually seen a 28% increase. Now, a lot of these deaths make front page news, and people, particularly women, are aware of this and have started taking to the streets in protest. So this podcast is being released at a time when there is a lot of discussion about intimate partner violence, and also just in time for the LGBTQ Domestic Violence Awareness Day, which is held annually on May 28, and it's the only day like it in the world. It actually started in Queensland by Ben Bjarnason, and it's now a global event with government departments and organisations from about 14 countries around the world recognising the day. But to answer your question about whether or not it will lead to changes, I think it's all an important part of social change. So there isn't one answer. If there was, then this issue would have been solved years ago. But change will come from the community at large. And so seeing the broader community passionate about change and seeing the broader community learning about intimate partner violence is really encouraging. But it's also not the first time that we've seen waves of protest and waves of media attention like this.
Well, we do have Ben Bjarnason with us today, who is the person who, as you say, Kai, kicked this off. Ben, it is an honour to have you here. Welcome to The Latest. Thanks for being here.
Thanks very much for having me.
Why did you establish the LGBTQ Domestic Violence Awareness Foundation? Tell me about how that came about.
So I think, you know, while the majority of victims and survivors of domestic family violence are women and children, we recognised that there was a distinct need to highlight abuse occurring in LGBTIQ+ communities as well. So the foundation was established in 2020, and it came about after the inaugural LGBTQ Domestic Violence Awareness Day. So we had such an overwhelming response from LGBTQ+ victims, survivors, and the community that we knew that we had to continue with our efforts to raising awareness of violence and abuse occurring in these communities. So the foundation's now committed to helping end domestic violence in LGBTQ plus communities through awareness campaigns, education programs, and reducing barriers to reporting abuse and accessing support.
Ben, for those who perhaps are not as familiar with the details, what does domestic violence look like? Like, how many different kind of types are there? How might it look to someone who maybe is not super familiar with it?
Yeah, so the term domestic and family violence is any ongoing acts used by a person to exert power and control. So that can be from partners, from spouses, carers, or family members. Domestic and family violence can consist of sexual violence, psychological, physical, spiritual, financial, or social abuse against another person, and as well as coercive control. So it can present in many different ways, and I'd really encourage anyone to, you know, make themselves aware of what those signs might be by looking at websites like ours, the LGBTQ Domestic Violence Awareness Foundation, or Say It Out Louds, and learning more about those different types of abuse and how they might present.
You touched on the concept of financial abuse, which is something that, you know, a lot of people might not have heard of or might be familiar with, but I think is certainly increasing in its prevalence. Could you speak to what financial abuse is and what it consists of and some of the signs perhaps?
Yeah, so when we speak about financial abuse, most often we talk about a person giving their partner an allowance, for example, of how much they can spend per week, or controlling what they're buying, controlling their spending, monitoring their spending, and using that as a method of power and control. And another one is, you know, racking up debt in their partner's name and, you know, putting them in debt and affecting their credit score and rating as well.
Kai, how common is financial abuse?
Well, there really is essentially no research nationally or internationally on the prevalence of financial abuse in LGBTIQ communities. Research on financial abuse in heterocis relationships suggests that it features in over 90% of abusive relationships. What we also know from research on men's violence against women is that financial abuse is one of the main reasons why a victim won't leave a relationship. And it's also a form of abuse that has lifelong impacts, even after an abusive relationship has ended. So a victim survivor might be dealing with the ramifications of debt or poor credit ratings or no superannuation for the rest of their life. So we know that it is an especially harmful form of abuse, and one that LGBTIQ people would no doubt experience as well.
I think there's probably also a line there as well where, you know, when we talk about abuse that people might receive, once people are out of that situation and they're past it, well, then it's in the past and it's done. But financial abuse, as you say, something that can stick around for a very long time and has that kind of control even after the perpetrator has left.
Exactly. And I actually think that might be one of the reasons why a perpetrator uses it to control their partner, because they're aware of that. I've worked with so many victim survivors of abuse, and one of the things that I hear time and time again is, I wish it was only the bruises, because the bruises heal, the bruises go away. Something like financial abuse can really impact someone for the rest of their life. So I'm actually attempting to bridge the lack of research this year as a part of working for LGBTIQ plus Health Australia. We're doing a series of interviews with people in our community who have experienced financial abuse, so that we can actually start to address it and also support people in our communities who are impacted by financial abuse. Regarding research in general into domestic violence in our communities, we're playing a little bit of catch up. And that's for a few reasons. One of them being that there is a lack of population-wide data that captures the experiences of our community. So adequate questions about sex characteristics, gender identity, sexuality have not been included in any of the major national sexual, domestic and family violence studies, such as the Personal Safety Survey. So instead, our community is relying on pretty significant and ever-growing, but currently a really incomplete collection of smaller scale sexual, domestic and family violence studies, or the larger LGBTIQ health studies like Private Lives that includes some questions on sexual, domestic and family violence.
Well, with that lack of research into our communities. Ben, does it seem to you like LGBTQIA plus communities speak about domestic violence?
Look, I think it's definitely increasing, but previously it wasn't really something that was ever spoken about. When we look at media, government campaigns, support services, the conversations around domestic and family violence were generally about heterosexual cisgender men perpetrating violence against a heterosexual cisgender woman. And as a result, LGBTQ people were just left out of those conversations and mightn't actually speak about their own experiences or even recognise their own experiences of violence and abuse.
Why do you think that is?
Look, I think, when we look at those media campaigns and sort of things, you're not seeing your own relationships in those campaigns or in those conversations. So you might not identify that your experiences are actually classed as domestic and family violence and might be something else.
I know that you yourself are a survivor of domestic violence. Tell me about how that experience shaped the work that you do today.
Look, to be honest, I probably wouldn't be doing the work I was today, or I am today, if it wasn't for my experience. Through that experience, I found there was such a huge gap in support services available for LGBTQ plus people experiencing violence and abuse, and also such a difference in the recognition and responses that we receive from frontline services. So I guess I wanted to change that and make sure that LGBTIQ plus victims have equal and safe access to support.
What are some of the common responses that LGBTIQ plus people receive if they are to come forward?
The domestic violence sector is generally funded and operates under a gendered framework, which means that LGBTQ plus victims don't necessarily have the same access to support services available. As a result, you might be hearing of people who are referred to homeless services if they can't have access to refuge or emergency accommodation. When we look at perpetrator programs, perpetrator intervention or behavioural change programs, they're only available for cisgender heterosexual men generally. There's one available in Victoria for gay, bi, queer and trans men, but that's it for Australia. And, you know, we do account for a huge amount of the population, so there's just not that same level of support available for us.
I hope it's okay to ask this, but when you were abused, how did the people in your orbit, your friends, your family, how did they react to that?
A lot of the time it wasn't actually called out as domestic or family violence. It was not necessarily downplayed, but, you know, excuses were made and it was talked about the person's mental health, their use of drugs or alcohol, or their upbringing childhood. So a lot of the time they might have recognised those bad behaviours, but it wasn't being recognised as domestic violence.
You're listening to LGBTIQ plus Health Australia's The Latest. We're discussing domestic violence among LGBTIQ plus communities with Ben Bjarnason, founder of the LGBTQ Domestic Violence Awareness Foundation, and Kai Noonan, director of sexual, domestic and family violence prevention at LGBTIQ plus Health Australia. Now, Ben, in 2016, you were awarded a Churchill Fellowship to further explore domestic violence in LGBTQ relationships. Tell me about that project.
Yeah, so I went, travelled overseas to six countries. I went to eight different police departments and 15 support services, investigating methods for police to enhance the way that they respond to domestic and family violence in LGBTIQ plus communities. So while I was over there, I found that, you know, it was really similar issues across the world in those places. Where I visited, there's still a huge lack of recognition and support internationally for LGBTQ plus victims and survivors, and really found that it's so important to have those active and engaged LGBTIQ liaison officer programs happening in those police services, as well as having the option to do online reporting and also, the effectiveness of the domestic violence disclosure schemes that have been seen, particularly in places like Scotland and UK.
Who do you reckon is leading kind of the charge in that? Like who's got best practice going at the moment?
Well, you know, speaking to people overseas now, they're actually saying, from a lot of people I've spoken to, that Australia is now considered to be the leader in the LGBTIQ domestic and family violence space. So that's obviously anecdotal, but, you know, when I look at the responses that were happening when I did my fellowship in 2016, not really a huge amounts changed in those areas, which were then at the time considered leaders, and we've moved quite considerably in Australia since that time in our support and awareness for LGBTQ plus domestic and family violence. So, yeah, I think Australia's leading the way at the moment, but there's still a huge amount to do.
Kai, having worked in the space for 10 years or so now, what key initiatives have you seen in the LGBTIQ domestic violence space in Australia that make us leaders in this space?
When I started working specifically in LGBTIQ, sexual, domestic and family violence, there were really only a handful of people doing this work, and almost all of them are still tirelessly working in this area today. Now, that number has grown significantly in recent years, and I put that down to a few key changes. So in 2015, we had the Victorian Royal Commission into Family Violence, and that saw a really impressive Victorian government commitment and resources pumped into the sector down there. So since the Royal Commission in Victoria, significantly more money has been invested in LGBTIQ plus sexual, domestic and family violence in that state alone than in every other state and territory combined. So what that means is we've seen an incredible amount of research, resources, programs that are coming out of Victoria. In 2016, we had the New South Wales Blueprint for Reform, which named our communities as a priority population. Since then, we've seen long-term investment in this space in New South Wales as well. And then we had the marriage equality debate in 2017. Now, I believe that that time brought about a broader recognition and acceptance of not all, but many LGBTIQ relationships. And I believe that's led to a greater honest discussion about our relationships, or at least some of our relationships as well, which has then helped people to come out about or discuss some of the, I guess, the darker sides and the challenges of our relationships as well. And then in 2022, the national government released the National Plan to End Violence Against Women and Children. Now, that national plan explicitly includes LGBTIQA plus people, and it clearly acknowledges that our populations are impacted by gendered violence. So by including our communities in the broader reforms and the government action plans, that actually leads to funding. And funding for our communities in the last 10 years has led to initiatives such as the National LGBTIQ Specific Resource Say It Out Loud, some great programs in Victoria such as Rainbow Door and Queer Space, which offer healthy relationships programs and intervention and support for people around their relationships. It's led to a trial of behaviour change programs in New South Wales for LGBTIQ people of all genders, which is a world first. And now we're seeing the rollout of 15 new frontline sexual, domestic and family violence workers across the country, and they're positioned largely in LGBTIQ organisations in those states.
Ben, what kind of help is there for LGBTIQA plus people who are impacted by domestic violence in Australia, like in terms of support services?
Look, it can vary from state to state. It varies depending on if you're in a metropolitan area, regional or remote area, and the availability of those support services. So there definitely needs to be greater investment on our responses to domestic and family violence in LGBTQ plus communities nationally. So there is support available. You can go to places like Say It Out Loud, where there is a part of the website where you can search for support in your local area of who is inclusive in their services. So there is support out there, but definitely needs to be more investment still, because there's not enough, and generally it mightn't be as equal as it would be for heterosexual, cisgender women accessing those services.
We will drop the link to Say It Out Loud in the show notes of the podcast as well, if you want to go and chase that up. What kind of barriers are there to accessing the support that is available?
Look, unfortunately, there are many barriers for LGBTQ plus people reporting abuse or accessing support. It can be like the fear of isolation, homophobia or transphobia from the wider community can contribute to victims staying with an abusive partner. Like I was talking about earlier, they might not recognise that certain experiences or behaviours constitute domestic violence. There's those negative historical events involving police and LGBTQ communities, the poor recognition of DV within LGBTIQ plus relationships by services and police. There can be the fear of their sexuality or gender identity being exposed to their family, friends, or work colleagues if they were to report the abuse. Then there's, you know, the belief that they won't be believed or they won't be taken seriously. And not wanting to come out about their gender identity or their sexuality. There's the shame and embarrassment around reporting of abuse. The fear of homophobia or transphobia from police or support services. And then when we look at the gendered nature of support services, so crisis accommodation, court safe rooms, and perpetrator behavioural change programs just don't meet the needs of LGBTQ plus communities.
There's so many different barriers, it seems. And, you know, among our diverse community, lots of people are in lots of different situations that result in different experiences. You know, the experience of a cisgender gay man would be very different to the experience of a trans woman. So, Ben, how does our community, you know, kind of different letters across the acronym, how does domestic violence affect everybody differently?
Yeah, look, it affects everyone in our communities very differently. That can be based on their gender, their sexuality, their location geographically, whether they're in a metropolitan area or regional area. So an example I often use is, you know, the response for a cisgender lesbian victim in Brisbane will be completely different of that of a First Nations trans person in remote Australia or remote Queensland. So we really need to tailor those responses to be able to meet the needs of everyone in our community. There's not just an overall response that we can have for LGBTQ plus people.
Kai, what about you?
Because the domestic violence sector is really structured on binary understandings of gender, it means that often only female victims and male perpetrators are included in data collection and in intervention responses. So if you're a female person who uses abuse, or if you're a male victim of abuse, or if you're gender diverse or non-binary, then there's really next to no services for you. And also, trans and gender diverse and intersex people are basically invisible from all mainstream sexual, domestic and family violence data collection and research. Now, that includes really important national pieces of research, such as the Personal Safety Survey and the National Homicide Monitoring Program. This is despite knowing that trans women, and especially trans women of colour, have always faced disproportionate levels of violence. And yet, trans people of all genders are really invisible in the broader response to ending violence in our communities.
Well, to that point, you know, back in October of 2022, the Australian state and territory governments released the National Plan to End Violence Against Women and Children for 2022 to 2032, speaking to, again, specifically only women and children. It is a big overarching national policy framework that is intended to guide actions towards ending violence against women and children over the next 10 years. And that language, as I say, of protecting women and children and not specifically referring to LGBTIQA plus communities. So, Kai, is there any support in there in that report for our communities?
Yeah, the National Plan acknowledges that LGBTQA plus populations are impacted by gendered violence, and it really does aim to explicitly include the experiences and the needs of our community, and that is of our whole community. The plan also gives specific examples of types of abuse that impact our communities, such as identity-based abuse. And that really helps to shine a light on some of the unique experiences of people in our communities. And it does go some way to creating broader public awareness that abuse happens in our relationships. And the National Plan promotes increased investment in sexual, domestic, and family violence services and programs that are led by our communities, and a greater investment across the country into specialist services. While the plan is ambitious, it doesn't actually include any tangible targets or a clear roadmap for exactly how all of these considerations will translate into action. And there's actually a lack of detail on how progress will even be measured. Considering the short-term and inconsistent nature that LGBTIQ organisations have been funded to work in this space to date, a clear strategy is needed to guide and structure this work, and we just haven't been given that. So the real impact of the national plan will actually be seen through its implementation across the three action plans. So two of these action plans are separate five-year action plans, with the first one that was released in 2023, and the third is a dedicated Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander action plan. So it's the implementation of these action plans that there'll be an opportunity to ensure that some of the potential gaps for how we're going to end gender-based violence in our communities, how they'll actually be filled in. I think it's also important to highlight that progress will be monitored through what will be called a performance measurement plan. And that is currently under development, and it's expected to be in place in early 2024. How LGBTIQA plus people are captured in the performance measurement plan, though, is also yet to be seen. So while the national plan is really ambitious and does include LGBTIQ people, neither the national plan or the accompanying action plans explicitly state what steps will be taken to achieve the goals under the national plan.
You're listening to The Latest. We're chatting with Ben Bjarnason, the founder of the LGBTQ Domestic Violence Awareness Foundation, and Kai Noonan from LGBTIQ Plus Health Australia about domestic violence on LGBTIQ Plus communities. Now, Ben, since your personal experience of abuse, what kinds of changes have you seen in awareness and support for LGBTIQ plus people who do experience abuse in their relationships?
Look, we have come a long way. My experience was about 10 years ago. And at that time, when I went looking for support, I couldn't find any, to be honest. I went on to a bunch of different websites, and the only support I could find for men was for men using violence against women. So I guess that really reinforced the belief that I couldn't be a victim, and really didn't have anywhere to go for support. So when we look at what's available now, there is so much more awareness around now. We've got many different organisations focusing on LGBTQ plus domestic and family violence in both the response, awareness, and education space. And that's obviously had a ripple effect across the support sector, as well as government and the corporate space as well.
How does it feel to you to see that kind of level of support growing?
Look, I wish it would grow quicker, but it's fantastic, you know. We have come such a long way, particularly in the last sort of 5 years, I'd say. And yeah, it's great to see that, and hope we can continue on the same trajectory and continue the awareness and education and make sure that we are getting that right level of support for people.
Do you think we'll see a reduction in the prevalence of domestic violence across the country in our lifetimes?
Look, I'd love to think so, but we certainly need to do more in our responses to domestic and family violence and its prevention if we're going to eradicate domestic and family violence in our communities. When we look in the prevention space, I suppose it'd be fantastic for everyone to be aware of what a healthy relationship looks like and what the signs of a unhealthy one might be. And also just for friends, family members and work colleagues, being able to identify those unhealthy traits in a friend or family member's relationship and knowing where they can refer that person for support or how they can, offer support themselves is so important if we're going to end this violence in our communities.
I agree with Ben. I think a lot needs to happen in order to support changes. I do think that the LGBTIQ communities have already made incredible advancements in our freedoms and our rights and our broader social acceptance. And I do think that as society accepts us and our relationships more, then I do think that we will begin to see, as a result of that, some reduction in the violence in our relationships as well. I do want to stay hopeful. I've been working in this sector for a very long time, and I stay working in this sector because I think we do need to believe that change is possible. And as I said at the start, we have actually seen a gradual decrease in intimate partner homicide cases. We've also seen an increase in people reaching out for support about the abuse in their relationships. Now, that could mean that abuse is increasing, but it also definitely means that people are seeking help and seeking support. And as we have in recent years seen an increase in services in our community, and we will continue to see an increase in services in our community, then LGBTIQ people who are experiencing abuse will get the help that they need and will ultimately be able to leave abusive relationships. And also, I do believe that we will see an increase in primary prevention initiatives and an increase in behavior change programs for people who use abuse. And really, that's where we should be focusing our attention. We shouldn't always rely on victim survivors to end abuse. We should really be focusing on people who use abuse and also focusing on the broader community. How can the broader community change our attitudes that actually support people to perpetrate violence?
You know what? Stay hopeful is a very nice note to end on. Ben Bjarnason and Kai Noonan, thank you so much for joining us today on The Latest. Really appreciate your time.
Pleasure. Thanks very much for having me.
Thank you so much for having me, and thanks so much for talking about a topic that's really important to me.
Again, a huge thank you to Ben Bjarnason for your expertise and sharing your story today, and to Kai Noonan as well for the additional support. If you or someone you know is experiencing domestic or family violence or sexual assault, you can call the Rainbow Sexual Domestic and Family Violence Helpline on 1-800-487-212 or 1-800-RESPECT on 1-800-737-732. For more support options, you can check out the show notes as well. For information about financial abuse, including resources and support that's available, search online for CommBank Next Chapter. If you're worried about your finances because of intimate partner or family violence or coercive control, you can contact CommBank's Next Chapter team on 1-800-222-387. Even if you're not with CommBank, this service is available to everyone who needs it, no matter who you bank with. CommBank Next Chapter, 1-800-222-387. And we'd like to acknowledge and thank CommBank for their support of this podcast. If this podcast has raised any issues for you, you can contact QLife, which provides Australia-wide anonymous LGBTI peer support and referral for people wanting to talk about a range of issues, including sexuality, identity, gender, bodies, feelings, and, as we've been discussing, relationships. QLife services are free and include both telephone and web chat support delivered by trained LGBTIQ plus community members from across the country. Call 1-800-184-527 or visit qlife.org.au to access the web chat. And finally, if you'd like to suggest the person that you want to hear being interviewed on the podcast, let us know. Email info@lgbtiqhealth.org.au and include the word podcast in the subject. If you've enjoyed this episode, hit subscribe or share it with someone who you know will get something out of it. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.